Welcome to We Are Libertarians Daily. I'm Sarah Brady Wagner, and I'm here today with Reinhold.
Good evening.
So today we are going to cover the latest comments by Trump in regards to the 14th Amendment. So a couple of days ago, Trump made a statement kind of out of nowhere that he plans to end birthright citizenship and is going to do so by executive order.
And the funny thing is that wasn't announced. He didn't seem to plan to want to announce it. It sort of leaked, and he was hit by it in an interview. And I'm wondering if he was trying to position it to be sooner to Election Day than it was, or if it was just an organized leak and he was pretending.
Well, now that we all know, generally the initial response has basically been he can't do that because of the 14th Amendment. So we want to sit down today and discuss what is the 14th Amendment actually say and what are the arguments kind of behind each side. So, Reinhold, do you have the text of the amendment in front of you by any chance?
I do have the text of the amendment in front of me. Let me see here. So it's section one of the amendment that was passed in 1789. It said, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws.
Well, that certainly seems pretty cut and dry, but I see three more sections to this law, so please tell me it gets more complicated.
Actually, the rest of these sections do not involve immigration or statehood or anything like that. It's more about representation and how representation is going to be appointed and those sorts of things.
Okay, so really the entire argument is just about that one paragraph, which, again, it seems pretty straightforward. And it has historically been interpreted to mean that anyone born on U.S. soil is subject to U.S. jurisdiction and therefore automatically a United States citizen. One of the comments that Trump made was that we're the only country in the world that does this, which is not accurate. There are several countries that offer birthright citizenship.
There are almost 40, I think.
I think 38 was the number I saw.
Right.
So it's certainly not just an American concept, but it has been a respected concept in American law since the amendment was passed, since 1869. So the argument coming from Republicans that I've heard in how this could theoretically be justified is that we've never had a court ruling on the exact interpretation of the 14th Amendment, specifically in how to interpret the part that clarifies those who are subject to the jurisdiction of.
Right. Well, there was a case about 20 or 30 years after the amendment was put in place. So in 1882, for the first time, the United States was given the power to control immigration, because until that time, they did not have anything to say about immigration. And what they did was they put in a protection against Chinese immigration.
So would it be fair to say that when this amendment was written, there wasn't really a concept of legal or illegal immigration?
There was not. I mean, there was not federally. Some states determined who could be citizens of their state, right? But any person who was a citizen of the United States was going to be a citizen of the state that they were born in, according to the amendment. So that was always understood to be the case. But there was really not a lot of immigration control or anything like that up until the late 1800s. And even then, it was very minimally used until the 1920s, 1930s, and then 1940 when the first green card was released, was issued. That's when we started actually creating a legal status around being here in the United States without being a citizen, but still being considered legal, as it were.
So the kind of target of this statement or this intention is specifically at immigrants, particularly immigrants who are undocumented or in the country illegally, having children while they're here on U.S. soil. They become U.S. citizens. Often these children are referred to as anchor babies because they provide a legal route then for the parents to be able to apply for permanent residency or a green card. Is that correct, or am I misunderstanding that?
That's the argument that's made. So just being so if you're born here and you're a citizen, that does not necessarily mean that your parents are going to be automatically giving legal resident status. That still has to be applied for. It still has to go through the courts. But most of the time, it's considered good form to do that, as long as there's nothing preventing you from doing so. Like, the person's not a terrorist or somebody who's, you know, committed multiple murders in another country or something like that. So as long as they pass like a background check, they're usually given that legal status of some sort, some visa status.
So would having a child who is a United States citizen allow somebody to just basically just because of that go from a completely undocumented status to a fully legal documented worker?
I'm not sure about that. I don't know. I don't think it's automatic. But I do think that they can apply and have that waived. The problem lies there in the status of being an illegal, you know, alien of sorts. So technically that is a break of the law, but is a misdemeanor. So that doesn't trigger, you know, a felony type situation where it would prevent you from getting that legal resident status just by the fact that you are here illegally at that point.
So, I mean, there is a little bit, you know, some truth to that idea that, you know, this can be a means for bringing in more immigrants, which I would not necessarily think is bad, but
I'm not sure it's so much a drive to bring people, you know, to try to get here in order to have the baby on American soil so that you can be an American citizen. I'm sure there's some of that that goes on, but a lot of times it's more a case of fleeing another country where if they're born on soil there, they are subjected to mandatory conscription into military when they reach of age, or other laws that they want to try to get away from. So it's as much as getting away from a bad situation as it is trying to come here and get a good situation, as it were.
Okay. So if Trump were to be able to get this done, even if only temporarily through an executive order, I mean, even if it was just a short amount of time until the Supreme Court had a chance to step in and say nope. One of the things that is kind of brought up for me is that this would introduce the problem in the United States of stateless children, which is something we've never ever had to deal with because of this birthright citizenship, but is an issue in a lot of European countries that don't necessarily offer that automatic birthright citizenship. Do you have any kind of like experience or knowledge around that topic at all?
Not really.
So, well then let me just kind of explain what I know. So this issue of stateless children is exactly what it sounds like. It's children who are born with no citizenship and do not belong to any particular nation. A lot of times this can happen because they're born in an area that doesn't offer birthright citizenship, and also the laws in the country that their parents are citizens of don't necessarily offer them automatic citizenship through their parents. For example, in some countries, I want to say Iran is one country in which only fathers can confer citizenship. So right now they're having issues with people who are fleeing. No, it's not Iran. I can't think of which. It might be Syria even. But there are refugees who are facing the problem of they're separated from their families. So you have children who are separated from their fathers, and their fathers can't give them their legal status, so you're stuck in this legal limbo, which makes you very vulnerable because you don't have any nation that has promised to uphold your rights.
Yeah, look out for you in any way.
Yeah, there's no embassy that you can go to. You know, there's no constitutional rights because you're not a citizen of any state. And this is a really big deal when it comes to kids, because a lot of times this means that they're unable to get basic medical care. They're unable to go to school. You essentially have children that are fully living people, and they're raised in, you know, the country that they're raised in, but it's kind of a shadow civilization. They're not able to come out and interact officially with just the basic parts of a community, a civic life, because they don't have any way of proving who they are.
And the other aspect of that is, say you decide you want to deport them from your country. That's the only country I've ever known. You know, where are you going to send them to? You're just going to take them to your border and say good luck, you know, and then somebody else's problem. But that really isn't a good way to handle that for somebody who's lived there their entire life in your society.
All right. So, you know, that would be a problem that the United States would have to deal with really for the first time in our history.
Right. Because back then, you know, before the idea of the anchor baby didn't exist, because there wasn't really illegal immigration at the time. Right. Until the 30s and 40s. And then we started getting into more protectionism post McCarthy, and then Cold War, and then people in the South worried about keeping their job level status and how much they were making at a certain rate. They didn't want people coming in and making less than them. So we kind of created this whole situation of a situation where somebody could be here and have a baby, but they're not here legally. Because that was just never thought of, you know, 100 years ago.
So, I mean, are there any other kind of fallout that you could see coming from this if and possibly when President Trump decides to try and override the Constitution by executive order?
Well, I mean, we've already seen tolerance has changed the way asylum seeking works within the United States, right? So I'm sure there's going to be some attempt to change some of that in that area, but I don't think it's got, so what I think is going to happen is that he's going to try to make this executive order, and it's immediately going to get turned over by federal courts. Federal courts will say, no, you can't do that, 14th Amendment, and block it, just like they did with the travel bans originally, right? And then that's going to have to get its way to the Supreme Court before it can be adjudicated, before it'll take effect. So I don't think it's going to take an immediate result before that happens.
So one of the things I've heard kind of brought up against the 14th Amendment in this case, is that it was adopted kind of under duress after the Civil War. I personally don't put a whole lot into that argument, just because it's been a while, and it's the really only one I can think to say that. But the states had to adopt the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment in order to be able to be accepted back into the Union. And I've heard several people make the argument that that basically equates to it being done under duress, and that the amendments were not carefully worded enough and should be reconsidered even, which, I mean, goes down a whole let's re-amend the Constitution.
Right. If you want to change what the Constitution says, you go through the amendment process. You don't pass a law or sign an executive order to change that. Because if you want to ignore one section of the Constitution, even one that you don't like, that means that somebody else can ignore one that they don't like. And then pretty soon, nobody's respecting the whole thing at all. And it's meaningless.
Right. You know, it's also interesting to see the rhetoric so quickly switch. We heard for several years about Obama trying to rule with, you know, rule with his pen.
Yeah.
And now we have Trump, who's happy to step behind him. I mean, I have the quote in wonderful Trumpian glory. It was always told to me that you need a constitutional amendment. Guess what? You don't. You can definitely do it with an act of Congress, but now they're saying I can just do it with an executive order.
So says the lawyers that he's paid to recommend that to him. right? So, yeah, he's got, just like there were Bush lawyers who explained how the spying was constitutional or torture was fine as long as they did these rules and followed these things. And it wasn't. And we all know it wasn't, but that's what their lawyers were pushing through. They were going to make the argument, right? And that's what is the unfortunate thing about this, is that the majority of lawyers are probably looking at that going, no, there's no way. Based off case history, based off what it says, based off the last 150, 200 years, you know, this isn't what was meant by that.
So what about the idea of actually having a test legislation? So I know Paul Ryan has come forward and said, basically, this is ridiculous. You can't do this. But let's go into alternate universe and say there's a Republican majority. What if they did decide to draft and pass legislation that says citizenship is limited to individuals with one with at least one citizen parent?
Well, that's the ironic thing is that there is a Republican majority, and this would be the time they'd want to be doing that, I would think. But the problem is that that still violates. I mean, no Congress is able to pass a law that states anything different than what is given in the Constitution. And it's very clear that it says, will not deny any person. It's regardless of what class that they are, right? I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't matter. No person shall be denied that.
So it really comes down to jurisdiction, which I know you and I kind of agree on the argument that when we're speaking specifically about a group here of illegal immigrants, in order for them to be considered part of that group, they're by definition under the jurisdiction of the United States without the necessary documentation. And that's why we exercise our authority to say, okay, we can deport you. Right. It's kind of difficult to make the argument that we can deport you, but you're not under our jurisdiction.
I mean, that seems kind of counter to the whole argument of saying that the jurisdiction matters. Well, if you can tell me I can't be here, then I'm under your jurisdiction at that point, aren't I not? It seems kind of counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, it really, the jurisdiction really only allows for the exception of foreign diplomats, which are extended, you know, diplomatic immunity, and those who are explicitly, yeah. Right, people who are explicitly under the jurisdiction of another state.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, too, is a lot of the same people who are currently right now trying to say that this is something that should be implemented are most likely fourth generation immigrants who came in and were here under those same basically ways of getting here, right? So they came across in a caravan, which was on a boat. They were led into the United States as asylum or just immigration in without any thought that they were considered illegal to be here, right? So they didn't have to have documentation proving anything. They didn't have to have a green card, didn't have any of that. They had children who were here. They are citizens automatically. And now all the people who are descended from those people are trying to change the law to say that that can't happen.
Yeah. It amazes me when I see people say, you know, America is not here to take, I've actually specifically saw somebody say America is not here to take garbage of the rest of the country. I'm like, I particularly remember there's a poem that says, give me refuse.
There's this big statue in New York that you may have seen or heard of that has that written on it. Oh. You know, I mean, it's what America was. It's what made America great. When they say make America great again, that's what they should be talking about, is the allowing immigration from around the world brought in so many different views and thoughts and different people that it made us great. As a country, it made us, we rose to the most superpower in the world, you know, the number one superpower in the world from that, on the backs of that immigration. It wouldn't have happened if we had acted the way we are acting now in a protectionist mindset.
I completely agree. One thing though, that we do not agree on this subject, you had told me you're pretty confident that this is a very serious move on Trump's part, that this is something he genuinely intends to try and accomplish.
I do.
I almost don't buy it. The timing, I mean, I'm sensitive to the idea that it's right before Election Day. You know, he was complaining that, you know, the bomber and the shooter in Pittsburgh are basically taking away attention from him. To me, this seems like a really quick and easy way to, you know, refocus the attention back where he wants it, back where he thinks he'll be able to energize his base.
Well, I mean, he was trying that with the caravan, too. The caravan's not going to be here for 3 months, right? I mean, it's going to take forever. Yeah. And when it does get here, it's going to be a tenth of the size, if that. And we were taking in, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 people a day through Ellis Island and 100 years ago. I think we could handle, you know, a few people coming to the border, but he wanted to make it a big deal, and that's why he pushed that. So now, I mean, it's conceivable that the leak that happened happened under their direction. That happens a lot with leaks, where someone said, "Hey, go leak this to the press, and then we'll get it out there." But don't, you know, let it know it came from us. So that's very possible that that's what he did. But I still think he's serious about it. I think it's something he's been trying to work on for some time, because it fits in with a lot of the other policies and plans that he's stated before.
Either way, it certainly has got everyone talking about the subject.
And so I'm hoping that this starts to turn people around to say, hey, maybe we're going a little too far on this immigration thing. Right. Because I hear a lot of times people say, you know, I'm for legal immigration. I just don't want illegal immigration. I'm like, well, when you make the laws so arduous that you can't follow them,
yeah,
then you're going to end up creating the very prohibition-y black market environment that we complain about with we complain about with alcohol. We complain about with drugs today. I mean, it's the same thing's happening here. When we didn't have these laws, everybody was here. There was no issue. There was no legal immigration. People want to come here. They just don't, you know, if you make it impossible, they'll find a way in. So try not to make it so impossible. Treat them with respect. Let them come and let them be part of your society. And they're going to be more likely to follow your rules and laws and what you have in place, because they're appreciative of that being given to them, as opposed to them feeling like they have to sneak in and take it.
Yeah, it's really kind of a double standard that we put up, that we make the process of legal immigration, especially for what are considered lower skilled immigrants, which ironically are the ones that we think of very quickly when we think of immigrants. You know, you think of those who are coming here because they don't have a great life in their own country and they want a better life for their children, and they're willing to do whatever job that they can get. And we have those jobs, and we have them. We'll even have them under the table and happily give them to undocumented workers who are willing to take them, partially because American citizens don't seem to want those jobs a lot of times.
And the other thing, too, is that people seem to think that the immigration law is one thing when it's not. It's actually a lot of different other things than they're imagining. So right now, to get in here from, let's say, India, and you're a pretty high-level smart person, tech guy who wants to come over here and start working for a Microsoft or a Google or something like that, right? It's to the point now where that's almost a decade-long waiting list.
Wow.
Right? There are countries where it is not legal to immigrate here from, no matter what. You can seek asylum, but that's it. And seeking asylum is not guaranteed or written in stone, because they keep ratcheting down what constitutes the situation for you to be able to even apply for asylum. So Jeff Sessions went out and said, if you're escaping criminality, like a very horrible criminal situation, that's not good enough, right? It's like you have to be, these specific things have to be ticked off. And if you're not, then you just get sent back out again. You just get denied the asylum. It happened in the 90s, you know, and before that with the so we had the Vietnamese boat people that came over, and there was a big hue and cry against that. There was the Haitians that were coming in, and Clinton ran on changing the Bush policy on the Haitian asylum seekers to say, we're going to let the Haitians in. He took office and was told that there were 70 ships being built to flood the country with a bunch of Haitians. And he continued with the practice that that George Bush had set in place and rejected them and wouldn't let them come here. So it was decided by the Supreme Court in 93 that as long as somebody hasn't set foot on American soil, you can stop them, detain them, and send them back without even hearing their asylum plea.
Wow. Yeah, it's so different from the system that we think we have set up. You know, we like to think of it as this fair process that takes in, you know, people who are in danger. But, you know, we've kind of perverted that system so much that we're literally saying, we know you're in danger, go home.
We know you're in danger because we put you in danger. We're the ones who created the situation there in the first place, which we've talked about.
We destabilized your governments.
Yeah, and so now you're seeking asylum, and a lot of people are like, well, why don't they just seek asylum to Mexico? Well, a lot of people in the caravan that are on their way up here have done that.
Yeah.
You know, this whole idea that these people in the caravan were coming to flood the border and come across illegally, and that was never their intention. Their intention was to apply for asylum when they got here. So everything they had done up to that point was completely legal for U.S.
law. I've also seen a lot of claims that you can apply for asylum at an embassy.
You cannot.
Yeah, that's not how that works. You have to be on U.S. soil in order to apply for asylum in the U.S.
Correct.
So I guess, are there any final thoughts on the subject, on the 14th Amendment? Anything that you absolutely want to say?
I think that the argument that they're trying to make is spurious and based off of a quote by the author that has been misinterpreted to seem to mean what they think it means.
Do you have that quote by any chance?
I do have the quote. Let me take a second because this page is being very, very slow.
Technology.
Yeah. It's Forbes is where I'm getting it from. So for some reason, they just don't like to respond to the clicks on the screen. But so this person was Senator Jacob Howard, right? When he signed this in place, right? He put this out. He had written somewhere, and I just had it, and I have to get back to it. That, of course, he didn't mean for this to apply to foreigners, illegals, or foreigners, aliens who were here as, foreign dignitaries and ambassadors, right? Says this will not, of course, include persons born in the United States who are foreigners, aliens, who belong to families of ambassadors or foreign ministers accredited to the government of the United States, but will include every other class of person. And they leave out that every other class of person. So when you read this with the commas, and if you read it the right way, you can try to say he's saying foreigners or aliens or who belong to the family or people who belong to the families of ambassadors or foreign ministers, right? But that's not how it's written in the language, the style that the writing was at the time. It's saying that foreigners, i.e. alien, you know, also called aliens, who belong to families of ambassadors or foreign ministers. He's trying to very narrowly say, of course, we're not going to allow somebody's ambassador to come here, have a baby, and then that baby's going to be a U.S. citizen, because that puts a huge conflict of interest, and we have no jurisdiction over those people because they're here under the protection of their government. Right. So that's kind of where that gets into the legalese, because people are trying to make the case that he's saying something else with that comment.
Now, it's an interesting debate to watch happen, at the very least, because at least my Republican and Democrat friends both immediately went to their corners and found out what their arguments were supposed to be and came right back out with them.
Got their talking points.
Yeah. And it's just been this fascinating switch seeing, you know.
Well, and reading the Forbes article too, they're trying to make the case that, well, when the Indians, you know, after the 14th Amendment, we didn't give citizenship to all the Indians who were born on reservations inside the United States. Well, what they don't,
they're not subject to our jurisdiction.
Yeah, what they don't mention in the article is that technically those reservations are not part of the United States. It's their own sovereign country in there. Now, they are given the opportunity to become citizens if they leave the reservation and apply, they get citizenship. For, you know, it's guaranteed under a later law, but they're still, you know, that's not the same thing as what they're trying to make it seem like it means.
Right.
Because they're leaving out that convenient little fact that the reason why they didn't get citizenship was because it technically wasn't part of the United States, even though it was inside the continental lines.
If nothing else, this will certainly give plenty of talking points to get us through Tuesday and through this wonderful midterm election. So,
right. I mean, it gets the bases out, hopefully, for whoever wants this to be part of that. And, you know, whether it's a blue wave or it's a Trump defense or a seawall or whatever it is, it's going to be what it is.
Gold rush. Let's have a gold rush.
I would love a gold rush. I just don't. I see us making inroads, but I don't see too many wins on the table. But I still think that we're getting a little long on this.
Yeah, I was going to say, so let's go ahead and wrap it up, and we'll make sure not to get to anything that we should get into.
I could go into another whole. I was getting ready to go off on a little tangent, but no, that's really all I think is going to happen is that he's going to try this. It's going to be put out there as legislation. It's going to be immediately slapped down and rejected. It's going to get appealed. It's going to go to the Supreme Court, and then they're going to have to rule on it. And I just think that he's feeling confident that he can get it through because he just put two Supreme Court justices on the bench, and he thinks that they're going to rule his way.
Well, if you feel like you have learned something from this episode, be sure to subscribe to We Are Libertarians. Be sure to check us out on Facebook and join our Discord chat and get hooked into all of our social medias at wearelibertarians.com.